It is glorious, this history of ours. It is a great story, that of the Negro in America. It begins way before America was America, or the USA, the USA. It covers a wide span, our story. Let me tell it to you.
Welcome to another broadcast of Signs and Wonders, the show that came right on time. I'm your host, Dawid Yacoub. I'm coming to you live from Sweden. The date is Sunday, August 29th, 2010. Before we begin, I would like to open with a prayer. Okay. Spirits to the Most High, Yah. Ahai Yah. Okay. Ahai Yah, the Most High Yah. I pray in the name of your promise, Yahushua. I pray that you allow your humble servant to speak to those in need of this message. I pray that you bind and bound any demonic influence that may harm this broadcast. I pray that this broadcast will flow to the world. I thank you for your wisdom and knowledge and the opportunity to be your servant. I humbly pray in the name of your awesome gift, your son, Yahushua. Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thank you once again for coming. This broadcast is it's another very important topic that we're going to discuss today. Now, I hope this reaches those in need, that need to hear it. I actually wrote a blog for this, and I didn't upload it on the website yet. I'm going to wait because I wanted to edit it a little bit more. But after the broadcast, I should have it up there so then you can download it and follow along. Now, today we will be discussing, like, what's the difference between Jews and Hebrew Israelites, okay? We will discuss how Hebrew people were usurped by four different powerful nations before the appearance of the Messiah. Okay? Now, if we count them, we had the Nebuchadnezzar, Babylon, and then we had the Medes and the Persians. You know, actually it was the Persians first and then the Medes, but they were together. And then we had the Greek, and then we had the Romans. And then during the time of the Romans, the Messiah came. And, okay, now the third thing we're going to discuss is what is the difference between the Jews on the land of Judea and Yehudite of the tribe of Judah, the son of Israel. Now, there are distinct differences, and when we understand these differences, then we can see the picture more clearly, okay? Now, excuse me. Now, these are very important points to understand. If we're going to get a deeper knowledge about the people of the book, okay, this is about our history. As Hebrew Israelites, this is the history that we have to follow and to understand, you know, where we come from. But before I begin, I want to bring a point, and I want to tell you something that, a short story. Okay. I have a very good friend. Okay. He's actually a Muslim guy, and he's from Sierra Leone. He's a very good friend of mine. And he came over yesterday for a visit. And this is the Ramadan. This is month of Ramadan, so they're fasting. And, you know, he was fasting and praying and doing his thing, you know. And after he finished fasting, you know, we were discussing things. Now, we often have friendly discussions. You know, we have discussions about religion and the differences between Islam and Christianity and you know, as they say, Judaism, but I call it Hebrew history. Now, he understands that the Hebrews are African, which is good. And he says that we can, that when you look at the Quran, you can actually see this in there. But he's always, you know, trying to convert me to Islam. And, you know, I have to keep bringing him back and telling him, look, the, you know, the original religion that you practice is the Hebrew religion. So there really is no improvement on that, you know. And it's, you know, it's a cool discussion. We're like talking friendly and stuff, but he seems like he always wants to kind of, it's like Islam can improve on the word that the Most High has given us. You know, I don't know if that's the plan or if that's the thought, but it seems like they don't really understand that there is no need for an improvement. This is, you know, this is it. But anyway, in our discussion, I actually brought up a verse in the Apocrypha. Okay, now this is one of the hidden books that the Catholic Church took out, and these are actually books that have the Book of Maccabees in it. So what I'm going to read for you is I'm going to read a short description of history that happened in the Book of Maccabees, which explains about what they've done to the different books. Okay? Now I'm going to turn to page, it's page 448. Hold on one second. Bear with me now. Bear with me now. Okay. Now, now the reason why I'm reading this is because Islam always wants to be like the bastion of knowledge. Like, they have all of the knowledge, and anything that came before that is irrelevant to an extent. I know they do respect a lot of the holy books and stuff, but whenever you have a discussion, it seems like, anyway, here we go. Okay, now here it reads. It says, in like manner, Solomon also kept the 8 days. This is talking about, this is in the Book of Maccabees, and is explaining about the different books. Okay, kept the 8 days. The same thing was related also in the records and memoirs about Nehemiah, and that he founded a library and collected the books about the kings and the prophets and the works of David, and royal letters about sacred gifts. In like manner, Judas also collected, and Judas Maccabees is the guy who created the first war when they were started to pollute the temple, and when the Greeks came in. Okay, and it says, in like manner, Judas also collected for us all the books that had been scattered because of the outbreak of war, and they are in our hands. So if you want them, send me to get them to you. And why I read that is because I want to bring your mind to something. Now, during the time of the invasion of Nebuchadnezzar, this is 300 years after that, and they still were trying to hold on to the books. There was a library and a collection of books about the kings and the prophets and the works of David. And now all we have is just a thin Bible, you know, and it's just, and it consists of the Old and the New Testament. And the point I'm trying to make is that the amount of knowledge that's out there, that's floating around, you know, it's in the lost books of the Bible. It's in the Apocrypha. It's not just the Bible. So, you know, if you're a Christian and you're listening to this, you have to understand that what you have is a very, very, very limited amount of resources for your religion. You know, you're basically walking around handicapped, you know? Anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there real quick. Okay, now, let's begin. Okay, this topic is entitled, let me open up my file. It is titled The Usurpers and the Chosen People of the Caucasus. All right. Now, while I call it the chosen people from the Caucasus, is because they are from the Caucasus. And we are going to prove that today. And hopefully this broadcast doesn't get shut down in the middle of it, because this topic seems to be very, very touchy. And we are going to put to rest today that word anti-Semitism, because that word is not accurate. It is a falseness. It is a sorcery word, mind control word, in order to keep people quiet so the truth does not come out. All right. Now, in this discussion, I will attempt to break down the history of the people of the Caucasus, who are better known as Jewish Israelites. Now, in an earlier blog, I arranged three groups that represent the current belief concerning the chosen people of the Hebrew Scriptures. Okay? Now, remember in my first blog of the supers and the powers behind white supremacy, I created three tables. We're going to do that again today, and we're going to go over them today. Because we eliminated the British Israelite table. We have one more table to go, and that's the Jewish Israelite table. Okay, so what we're going to do is, in the first column, you see British Israelites. And like I said before, they are Anglo-Saxons, WASP. They embrace Yahweh God. They embrace the Messiah. They embrace the State of Israel. They reject the chosen people of the Most High. That's the British Israelites' characteristics. Characteristics of the Jewish Israelites is Zionists or Jews. They embrace Yahweh, God. They reject the Messiah. They embrace the State of Israel. They reject the chosen people of the Most High. And the third characteristics are the Hebrew Israelites. Their characteristics are they are Negroes, African Americans, or Blacks, so-called. That's what, you know, they call us. We embrace Ahaya. We embrace the Messiah. We embrace the land of Israel, not the State of Israel. And we embrace the chosen people of the Most High, because we are the chosen people of the Most High. Now, like in the last discussion, I spoke of the name of the Most High. Okay? Now, I want to clarify one thing before I continue. Now, there seems to be a lot of discussion around the name of the Most High. In the previous topic, I used the name, okay, to clarify a distinct difference between the Hebrews, the Jews, and the Saxons. This is why I use this name. It's for clarification between these different groups, okay? Now, for example, in the Jewish faith, the name is so holy that to speak it, it would be blasphemy, right? In the Saxons, they speak their version, like, you know, basically he's a tool of correction, or, you know, some kind of, like, you know, talisman or something. And of course, the Hebrews, we speak as if the Most High is a family member. You know? Now, the Hebrew, check this out. Since the Hebrew is constantly researching, comparing, arguing, and striving to correctly pronounce the name of the Creator, right? Ask yourself, how could this be in vain, right? I mean, how could we speak the name in vain? Now, there is nothing empty about striving to know the name of the Father. You understand? Now, in no way do we break the commandment by mispronouncing the name. Now, because being ignorant is not vanity, being ignorant is just part of the curses. You understand? Now, how can we know? Because all we're doing is trying to fulfill the void that was taken from us during our captivity. So we continue argue amongst ourselves about this is how we pronounce the name and this is how we pronounce it. Now, of course it's important. Of course it's important, you know, and we should know it. But we all are striving to try to know it, you know. And the commandment says, thou shalt not take my name in vain, but we're not taking it in vain. We're putting so much into it that we're fighting over it, you know. And we need to stop. We need to really think about what we're doing and just understand, you know. Ahayah, the one that exists. He means everything. All right, I just wanted to get that point out there. All right, and it's all in love. It's all in love. Okay, now, I just want to clarify that point. So where do we begin? Well, we successfully decimated the claims of the Anglo-Saxons as the so-called British Israelites in the last study. And today, we will do the same with the other usurpers, known as Ashkenazi Jews. So let us begin by laying out a few names. We're going to cross-reference using history. We're going to use authors, and we're going to use scriptures. These names are different titles of people of the Caucasus, and they are as follows. Okay, now, I wrote these names down, so this is what we're going to have. We have the different names are Askuza, Ashkenazi, Ashkenazim, Scythians, Rahegnians, Samaritans, Cimmerians, and Khazars. Okay, now, after each name, when I put this on the blog, we have reference, who I referenced them from. I referenced them from After the Flood by Bill Cooper, the Torah, Book of Genesis from Moshe, of course, the Jewish Virtual Library, Sons of Noah, Wikipedia article, Josephus, Encyclopedia Britannica, and the Jewish Encyclopedia. Now, so let's start with the name Ashkenazi. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to read from Wikipedia to get this started. And hold on one second. Sorry about that. I just want to make sure that I'm online. All right. Okay. According to Wikipedia, the theory that the majority of Ashkenazi Jews are descendants of the non-Semitic converted Khazar was advocated by various racial theorists and anti-Semitic sources in the 20th century, especially following the publication of Alfred Cuthbert's The 13th Tribe. Despite recent genetic evidence to the contrary and a lack of any real mainstream scholarly support, this belief is still popular amongst groups such as the Christian Identity Movement, Black Hebrews, British Israelites, and other, particularly Arabs who claim that they rather than Jews are the true descendants of the Israelites, or who seek to downplay the connection between Ashkenazi Jews and Israel in favor of their own. Okay, now, you see all those names? This is basically everybody in the world except them. Think about it. You have the Arabs, right? That's like about a billion people. You have just Israelites, you know what I'm saying, a couple million there, and of course the Black Hebrews, us, and then you have Christian Identity Movement, you know what I mean? That's a lot of people. So it's them against the world again. And so here is Wikipedia, another one says Ashkenazi Jews, also known as Ashkenazi Jews or Ashkenazim, singular, also Yahudia Ashkenazi, the Jews of Ashkenaz, are the Jews descended from the medieval Jewish communities along the Rhine in Germany, from Alice in south of the Rhineland in the north. Ashkenazi is the medieval Hebrew name for this region and thus for Germany. Thus, Ashkenazim or Ashkenazi Jews are literally German Jews. Later, Jews from Western and Central Europe came to be called Ashkenazi because the main centers of Jewish learning were located in Germany. And they go see uses of the name for the terms etymology. Now they have here, Ashkenazi is also a Japhetic patriarch in the civilization. Now, this is from the same article. So now they already said that everybody here was crazy for believing Alfred Cuthbert's 13th tribe, and then they admit that the name Ashkenazi comes from a Japhetic tribe, right? And it says reference to Genesis 10. So let's go to Genesis 10. And it says, this is from the Torah. It says, now, these are the generations of the sons of Noah, Shem and Ham, and Japheth. And unto them were sons born after the flood, the sons of Japheth, Gomer, and Magu, and Madiah, and Javan, and Tubal, and Meshach, and Terah. And the sons of Gomer, Ashkenazi, and Raphat, and Togmor, and the sons of Javan, Lishia, and Tarshish, Kittim, and Dudanim. But these were the isles, these were the isles of the Gentiles divided in their lands, everyone after his tongue, after their family, and their nations. So, straight from Genesis, okay, it explains that the sons of Gomer were Ashkenazi. That's Japheth. Okay, I don't know about you, but I'm looking at this name Ashkenazi, and you know what I'm saying? It ain't from Shem. Okay, so now this discussion should end here, right? Because it states in the Torah, which is their holy book also, that they are Japhetic and not Semitic, as they say. Semitic. But we are not dealing with truth here. We're dealing with deception. So we're going to have to really bring this home. And hopefully they listen to this recording. And whatever. Anyway, so here's another Wikipedia. It says, the Ashkenazi Jews later migrated largely eastward, forming community in non-German-speaking areas, including Hungary, Poland, Bulgaria, Lithuania, Russia, Ukraine, Eastern Europe, and elsewhere between the 11th and 19th century. With them, they took and diversified Yiddish, a basically Germanic language with Hebrew influence. See, Jewish language, you know. It had developed in medieval times as the lingua franca among Ashkenazi Jews, the Jewish community of three cities along the Rhine, Speyer, Worms, and Mainz, with the Shum language, Shum after the first Hebrew letter of Cyril, Wormatic, and Maltinus. Now, I don't know what the hell I'm reading with that. But anyway, the Shum cities are considered the cradle of the distinct Ashkenazi culture and liturgy. Now, they say the Shum cities are considered the cradle of the distinct Ashkenazi. Now, do any of this, do you see anything that says the, you know, Africa or, you know, Jerusalem, nothing, even that what they call the Middle East, none. All right, now, although in the 11th century, they comprised only 3% of the world's Jewish population. At their peak in 1931, Ashkenazi Jews accounted for 92% of the world's Jews. Okay, 3% of the world's population, 92% of the world's Jews. Today, they make approximately 80% of the Jews worldwide. Most Jewish communities with extended history in Europe and Ashkenazium, with the exception of those associated with the Mediterranean region, the majority of the Jews who migrated from Europe to other countries in the past two centuries are Ashkenazian. Eastern Ashkenazim is particular. This is especially true in the United States, which most of the 55.3 million American Jews' population is Ashkenazi, representing the world's single largest concentration of Ashkenazi. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I hope I'm not boring the hell out of you right now. This is very important that this information gets out, and it's very important that, you know, you hear it in a way that is presented to you with honesty and truth and without hatred, you know? Because there's no hatred here. This is just facts. I'm just giving you facts. I'm reading from, you know, information as presented. And now, here is the definition of an online dictionary. All right? Now, in a dictionary, it says Ashkenazi. And it says, one, a member of a group of Jews that after the diaspora settled in Central, North, and later Eastern Europe and developed Yiddish as their spoken language. Two, a descendant of this group, origin, Japheth, a German Jew, early after Ashkenazi, name of an ancient kingdom. And then it says, see Jeremiah 51:27, which we might look at later. And it says, after Ashkenazi's second son of Gomer, see Genesis 10:3. And it says, probably akin to Akkadian, Ashkenazi, Greek, the Scythians. Now remember when I put that list of names, the Greeks called them the Scythians. Now I also have a map, and this map actually has on it Table of Nations, and the map actually shows that, and I'll have that on the line later. Okay, so next we've taken something from Bill Cooper's book, After the Flood. All right, and this is from Bill Cooper's book. Look, I'm just giving you all kind of stuff. I'm giving you references. You can look at it because, you know, we need to get rid of this right now. And once we put the so-called Jews in the same area as the British Israelites, then we can move on from this, because there's so much stuff that I have to tell you about things coming. That's why the show is called Signs and Wonders. I need to lay this groundwork so that when people ask a question, I can say, please refer to the usurpers and the Jews or whatever, and then we can move on to the topics coming. Okay, now, it says here in, this is taken from Bill Cooper's book. If you remember our last study, I actually referenced this book a lot because it's a good resource to go to. Now, it says, Ashkenazis, the descendants of Ashkenaz, first settled in what is today Armenia, although in later Jewish writings, he was associated with his father Gomer. I mean, how many times are they going to tell you that it's Gomer? With a Germanic racist. Hence, Germanic Jews are still known as Ashkenazi. More immediately, the Syrians tell us in their inscriptions of the Askus, a tribe who aligned themselves with the Mani in a revolt of the 7th century BC. Now, that's important. That's very important, because the 7th century BC was the time that Nebuchadnezzar went to Jerusalem, Israel. Okay? Let's say that correctly. Went to Israel. All right? An event that is also mentioned in the Old Testament. Oh, see? Jeremiah 51:27. Indeed, it is in this statement that Jeremiah incidentally confirms the identity of the Ashkenazim with the Askusa. This name, the Askusa of the Syrian records, later became the Scythians of Herodias. And Herodotus is a Greek historian. Other early sources confirm their place of settlement to be the area later known as Pontus and Bithynia, where the people of Ashkenazi gave their name to the lake and harbor of Ashkenaz and the land of Ashkenian. Josephus tells us that they were subsequently known as the Greeks as the Rahagnians, and that's, well, of course, Josephus is another, they call him a Jewish historian, but, you know, he was in the land of Judea, so everybody in that land was Jewish, so, okay, because they show a picture of this man, and he looks nothing Hebrew to me. So after reading just a few paragraphs and seeing the table of nations, now you have to ask yourself, is this Hebrew? Are they Hebrew? Okay, and actually I wrote this down because this is for the web. I want you guys to look at the table and then you ask yourself, you know, are the Hebrew Israelites? All right, now here's a question. Remember in Deuteronomy 28, when I spoke of the curses that would befall on the children of Israel if they did not follow the laws of Moses. Now, I don't know how many of you actually listened to the Deuteronomy study. I said Deuteronomy 28, the eye-opener. Now, I'm going to break that down just a little bit today. Okay? Now, I'm going to refresh your memory on a couple of the verses because this is really telling right now. Okay? Now, in Deuteronomy 28:43, it states, the stranger that is within thee shall get up above, I'm sorry, The stranger that is within thee shall get up above thee very high, and thou shalt come down very low. Okay? Now, in reading this verse, you can see that they do not match these verses at all. Because first you have to ask, where is their lamp? Okay? And say, and you'll say, of course, it's Israel. Okay. Then, who in Israel is very high, and who in Israel is very low? And of course, you would say the Palestinians. Now, that one is like, okay, that's obvious. They don't follow, you know, Deuteronomy 28:43. Let's go to the next verse. Deuteronomy 28:44. He shall lend to thee, and thou shalt not lend to him. He shall be the head, and thou shalt be the tail. Now, we're really gonna think about this one here, because this is a nice one. Now, it says, you know, now, the Jews are supposed to be the ones that were taken into captivity and have to go about the curses. It says, he shall lend to thee. How many people are lending to the Jews? And thou shalt not lend to him. He shall be the head, and thou shalt be the tail. All right. So this one is real obvious. Have you ever heard of a Jewish banker? Now, in America, which has 5.3 million so-called cursed Israelites, okay, meaning Jews, how many of them are taking loans from the African-American population? I'll give you a little bit of time to think about that. Okay. Deuteronomy 28:45. Moreover, all these curses shall come upon thee, and shall pursue thee, and overtake thee, till thou be destroyed, because thou hearken not unto the voice of the Lord thy God, to keep his commandments. I'm sorry, I read that wrong. Because thou hearken not unto the voice of the Lord thy God, to keep his commandments and his statutes, which he commandeth thee. So, now, where are the curses? Okay? Deuteronomy 28:46. Now, listen very carefully. It says, and they, the curses, right, shall be upon thee for a sign and for a wonder, and upon thy seed forever. Now ask yourself, how long is forever? So is forever 1948? I don't think so either. Now before we continue, let's do a little deprogramming here. Now I provided a map, and I wish I would have put this on the web, but it gives a visual presentation of the nations of Noah. And when you take a look at the map, it actually gives all of the sons from Japheth to Shem and Ham. And I keep bringing you to this map because I want you to actually visualize it and see it. And then when you see it in your mind, you can say, okay, you know, most people believe with their eyes, and then you can see the obvious. All right. Now, before we begin, let us look at the word Jew. Okay? So what is Jew according to Wikipedia? The Jews, Hebrew, Yehuda, also known as the Jewish people, are a nation and ethno-religious group originating in the Israelites or Hebrews or the ancient Near East. The Jewish ethnicity, nationality, and religion are strongly interlaced, as Judaism is the traditional faith of the Jewish nation. Converts to Judaism, whose status as Jews within the Jewish ethnos is equal to those born into it, have been absorbed into the Jewish people throughout the millennium, right? So what is the conversion? I kind of read that, just read through that. But it says, converts to Judaism whose status as Jews within the Jewish ethnos is equal to those born into it, okay? Now, I actually looked up what is a conversion, and I have to warn you, this is a usurpation alert. And it says, in Jewish tradition, Jewish ancestry is traced to the biblical patriarch Abraham. All right? Now, how can it go back to Abraham when it is from Japheth? All right? Got to think about that. Then it says, Isaac and Jacob in the second millennium B.C. The Jews have experienced three periods of political autonomy in their national homeland, the land of Israel, twice during ancient history, and currently once again since 1948 with the establishment of modern state of Israel. The first of the two ancient eras, spanning from 1350 to 586 BC and encompassed the period of the judges, the united monarchs, and the divided monarchy of the kingdom of Israel and Judah, ending with the destruction of the first temple. The second era was the period of the Hasmonean kingdom, spanning from 140 to 37 BC. Since the destruction of the first temple, the diaspora has been the home of most of the world's Jews, except in the modern state of Israel. Jews are a minority in every country in which they live, and they have frequently experienced persecution throughout history, resulting in a population that fluctuates both in numbers and distribution over the centuries. Now, if the Ashkenazi is not Hebrew or Israelite, then how could this explanation be correct? All right. When I put this on online, you should read it and then ask yourself that question. Now, I guess we have to look at the word conversion for this to hold any water. All right. So we're going to look at the word conversion. I had to read through that first. And here's what it says about conversion. Okay. Conversion to Judaism is a formal act undertaken by a non-Jewish person who wishes to be recognized as a full member of the Jewish community. A Jewish conversion is both a religious act and an expression of association with the Jewish people. Okay? A formal conversion is also sometimes undertaken to remove any doubt as to the Jewishness of a person who wishes to be considered a Jew. Excuse me. The procedure for conversion depends on the sponsoring denomination and depending on meeting the ritual and other requirements for a conversion of the denomination. A conversion in accordance with the process of a denomination is not a guarantee of recognition by another denomination. It is not necessary for a person to formally convert to Judaism in order to adopt any of all beliefs and practices of Judaism. In Judaism, such a person are referenced to as a righteous Gentile. See, for example, the character of Job. There are various groups that have adopted Jewish customs and practices. For example, in Russia, the Subotniks have adopted most aspects of Judaism without formal conversion to Judaism. Now, so the question is this a cult? Is it a religion? Or is it a secret club? Okay, what is it? All right, so basically I have to go through rituals. I have to be sponsored through a certain denomination. And I can do all that, then I could be rejected, right? Now, if I do get converted, does this really make me a Jew? Okay? And now, if I get accepted, say I was a Chinese man from China, and I became a Jew, could I, you know, would the words anti-Semitism be correct? You understand what I'm talking about? Meaning, like, if I'm Chinese and I'm Jewish, you know, I obviously I can't say you're being anti-Semitic. So there's like many different variations. So we have to really think about what does Jew mean? This is my point. All right? So what does the word Jew really mean? And where did it come from? All right? Now, let's take a look back in history, and we're going to go to the land of Judea. Okay? Judea and Galilee. Now, this is something I got from the web, and it kind of explains it a little bit to what I'm going, what I'm trying to get at, and I'm going to read it. It says, Judea. Hold on, let me take a sip. Judea and Galilee were two separate states and political entities, as illustrated on the map of Palestine in the time of our Savior and in your Bible. Yahushua himself was not a Jew, Judean, or resident of Judah. He was a Galilean or resident of Galilee. You can get that from Matthew 26:69 and also John 7:41. And a Yahudite, okay, Yahudite, or descendant of the tribe of Judah, or Yahuda. The Yehudians of prominence were not of the tribe of Yehuda, but of Edomites. All right, now, this is the word Edomite, now Esau, okay? Pilate was being ironic when he wrote the sign, Yahushua of Nazarene, king of the Yehudians, for the cross. And you can reference that from John 19:19. That is, the Galileans, who was king of the Yehudians. All right, the Yehudians. As in Queen Victoria, and it says, as in Queen Victoria of England, Empress of India. You know, they're trying to say, making some funny thing, I guess. Yahushua grew up in Nazareth in Galilee. His disciples were fishermen from the Sea of Galilee. And although he visited Jerusalem, he spent most of his life in his home country of Galilee. You can get that from John 7:1. After Yahushua stayed in Galilee, for he could not walk in Yehudia because the Jews sought to kill him. His followers were constrained for fear of the Jews. That's John 7:13, 1938, and 2019. Now, you can see there's a distinct difference, right, between Yehudite of the tribe of Yehuda and a Jew of the town of Judea. All right. Now, see, I think what happened was, as history went on, both of these distinctions became blurred, and people kind of got confused, and either was confusion or deception, but somehow the disconnect happened here. And I'm going to read a little bit more of, okay, here we go. And more from the article. It says, Christ demonstrates a very real empathy towards the people called Jews, okay? And Bibles published after about 1776, now that date, 1776, it keeps coming up, but who would be more accurately described as Judeans, or residents of the Edomite-dominated territory of Judah. Jesus said that the Jews, you do not believe because you are not of my sheep. That's in John 10:24-27. It says, I was only sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Now, when they use the house of Israel, they mean the 12 tribes, including Yehuda, okay, the tribe of Yehuda. And that's in Matthew 15:24. In fact, Christ's reference to those Jews or residents of Yehuda, regardless of religion, race, or color, who believe on him as of their father, the devil. Okay, for although they were children of Abraham, they were not children of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and heirs of the blessing of Abraham. Nor did they have the faith of Abraham and were in all probability descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It seems a little bit confusing, but we'll put it together. John 8:31-44. In contrast, Yahushua instructed his disciples who were from Galilee of the Gentiles, not Yehuda. Acts 1:11-7. And it says to pray to the Father in Revelations 2:9-39. Yahushua speaks of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are the synagogues of Satan. Now, that's a very, very popular saying there. Jews with a lot of white supremacists and racists and all this stuff. And the thing is, they take it to try to take the sting out of it and to manipulate it. But there's a lot here that we should concentrate on. And it deals with the things that are happening in the world today. All right? Now, by the time Yahushua, by the time of Yahushua, the word Edom or Edomite had been translated by Greek and Latin into Iudas or Iudeus, meaning a Yehudian or a person living in Judea. Okay? The original King James Version of the 1611, I actually have this version, translated Edomim Yehudian into Ewes. It's like I-E-W-E-S. It wasn't until the revised edition of King James Bible that the word Jew appeared. The word Jew does not mean Israel or Israelite. We must conclude, therefore, that the first Jews were Canaanite, Edomites, Hittites. It is certain, according to the Bible, that Jews are not Israel. Okay, now let me read that again. It says, now let's not slip over that again. It says, the word Jew does not mean Israel or Israelite. We must conclude, therefore, the first Jews were Canaanite, Edomite, and Hittites. Okay, now, that's a strong statement. But can that statement be backed up? How can we back up that statement? Let's see. What I did was I said, okay, let me make a chart. Let me actually put this into on a piece of paper and write down all the people and put them in different boxes. And each box I named, okay? Now, I have in box one, it's called Hebrew Israelites, House of Judah. And they are from Shem, Eber, which is Hebrew. They are from Abraham, Israel, and the son of Yehuda. Now we have Hebrew Israelites of House of Israel. Alright, one of those Hebrew Israelites of House of Judah, Hebrew Israelites of House of Israel, because there was a split. Now these are from Shem, Eber, Hebrews, Abraham, Israel, tribe of Israel. So those mean the other 11 sons. Now we have Hebrews, Ishmaelites. Alright, so far we have Hebrew Jews, Judahites from Yehuda, Hebrew Israelites from Israel, Hebrew Ishmaelites. And we have Shem and Ham, Eber from Hebrew, Abraham, Ishmael, which is the Arabs. Now, the Arabs, their mother is Hagar. And a lot of you don't know this, but Hagar was actually the daughter of Pharaoh. And who was Hagar? Hagar was a handmaiden of Abraham. Because when he went into Egypt, Pharaoh took Sarah, and he wanted her for his wife. And then the angel put a hurting on him. So he was like, get out of here. And by the way, take this concubine. And the concubine was actually his daughter. But you can read that in the book of Yasser. All right, now, the next box is Hebrew Edomites. Now, their characteristics are from Shem, Eber, and which is Hebrew, Abraham, Esau, of course, was the brother of Jacob, and Esau became Edomites, and that was land of Idumea. Okay? Now, another box here, we have Japhetic Ashkenazi Jews. Their characteristics are they are Japhetic, they're from Gomer, Ashkenazi, or Scythians. And then we have another box, these are Japhetic Sephardic Jews, They are from Japhet, Tubal, and Savarian. Okay? Now, I know this is a lot of reading. A lot of you are probably bored to death right now. But it's okay. Just hang with me now. Here's a list of characteristics of the modern Jews today. All right? Now, what I did was I said, okay, I laid it out. Now, these are the Jews today. Now, here's a list. Now, I got this from all this information I collected from different sources to explain what exactly is an Ashkenazi Jew. Now, it says Ashkenazi Jews account for 85% of the world population of Jews. Now, it says Samaritans of Samaria, Edomites, according to DNA. Now, they do have Edomite DNA. They are Germanic race, Japhet. There's Neanderthal DNA that was actually revealed recently from the Caucasus Mountains, originated in Ashkenazi, settled in Edomia, became Jews of Judea. All right? Sephardic Jews, they account for 10%. Samaritans of Samaria, Edomites according to DNA, genetic race of Japhet, Neanderthal DNA, Caucasus Mountains, originated in Iberia, settled in Idumea, became Jews of Judea. Mizrahi, Jews, 5%. Samaritans of Samaria, Edomites of Ishmaelite DNA, Shem and Japhet, Neanderthal DNA, Elim, or, oh, this is the Persians and the Medes, settled in Idumea, became Jews of Judea. Now, all these groups below that I mentioned here became Jews based in their living in Judea. Okay? Now, these numbers are based from the world population of Jews, which is about 13,155,000. As you can see, the Mizrahi Jews are the closest to the Hebrews according to Ishmael and Esau, they are also in the line of Elim, so they are of Shem through this line as well. So this might explain why, I wrote this down. Now, what I'm saying is that the 5% Jews, the Mizrahi Jews in Israel, they are really the closest to the Hebrews, if we look technically, because they have Ishmael, and Ishmael, of course, was of Abraham, right? And then they also have Esau from, you know, when they were taken into Babylon, they call them the mingled people, and everybody, I guess, from then it was just, everybody just went buck wild. And then, there's Elim, okay, which was the father of the Persians, and that was when the Medes and the Persians came in, and of course Elim is the son of Shem. Okay, so if anybody has claims to Israel, it would be the Mizrahi Jews, because they have most of, you know, the claim as Hebrews according to facts. Okay, now what I'm gonna do, I'm going to take 5 minutes and get some notes together, and then I'll be right back. So I'm going to play something for you.
I made you a slave, better than being the monkey for the rest of your days. I should have put you in the sea, but you cost too much. Now you think to be, so you talk too much. I gave you the shed to sleep with some scraps to eat. But when it was cold, your black skin attracted heat. I don't like the way things have gotten. All you had to do was get on your damn knees and pick damn cotton. But you forgot it, you two-legged beast. Now I took you from the bushes, say thanks at the least. When I took you off the boats, I sprayed you with the hose. You used to be naked, I gave you your first clothes. From a savage running barefoot in the dirt, ooga booga, you and your family got work. I made you three-fifths of a man, look at that. And all I want is gratitude, you ungrateful black.
You may have got me down, and you may have put chains in my hands, but you don't understand that I'll be the man in the book. For real, and I'm a resurrect in the latter days, and I will lend, and you will borrow, and I will be the head, and you the tail, cause I'll be the Israelite man, you best believe, this is written, it's prophesied.
I'll change your name when I gave you the cross, you became a Christian and you always been lost. I used to make you dance for fun on top of the porch, and I've changed you through the forest with some hounds and a horse. Of course, you'll never say thanks for that. Why you run these races under 10 seconds flat? Them was the good old days when the master was the master and the slave was a slave. I gave you lemonade to quench your thirst when you told me about your escape plans and the works. You tried to escape and I couldn't have that. It's bad for business, so I had to slap your back. To get a black woman, I pay whatever price. I can rape them, they would never tell my wife. Now who gave you the good life? Remember that. You better say thanks to us, you ungrateful black.
For sure, I still got the scars in my back from your whips and the scars from your dogs that did bite me. You hung my fathers, remember that? And you burned them at the cross. But I'm still here, cause I'm a survivor. And I'm gonna resurrect in the later days, man. With the red, the white, the blue, and the purple, and the star around my neck. But where? Come on.
Now you want reparations? What are you kidding? Why don't you say thanks for all the things you were given? Who took your culture, made you a better man? Put the mark of the beast in your forehead and your hand. Who resurrected Egypt and put you in it? And who gave you the Christian church so you could mimic? Who allowed you to be a mason and serve ball? And who gave you some Gentile names to be called? Better than being homeless, we gave you cell blocks. And we saturated the projects with crack rocks. We tested syphilis and AIDS on you. Look at all the wonderful things you came through. Such a proud people, man, I hope you stay strong. But I got to tell you, our money is just wrong. Deep down, you want to bring those days back, but we can't cause of some of you ungrateful blacks.
You can talk all your big talk, but you really scared of me. See, my God is the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And you know that I'm the Israelite written about in the books. You know the kind of baptism that I was baptized with. You know what kind of anointing that we were anointed with. Man, you know we got the covenant, the promises. Man, your days are numbered.
Man, sitting in the shade watching you porch monkeys was better than cable. I had an enterprise. So much black speaking cotton you would think it was night. You cost coins, pennies. If you were able to eat grass, I would have got rid of all my animals. Look at you today, living in your own places. Imagine that. Reading, making money. You think you're free? You think you're free? We took away your name, your culture, your way of life, your God. You know nothing. As long as we keep you spiritually sick, you'll be our servant. You know what's the great thing about this? I can say this to your face, so you won't do a damn thing about it. It's a dirty job, but someone's got to do it.
Okay, welcome back. Welcome back. I had to take a quick break real quick. Where was I? Okay, now, after hearing the descriptions of the Ashkenazis and the Sephardics and the Mizrahi Jews, ask yourself, are their claims, are they doubtful that they are the Hebrews, or is it conclusive that they are the Hebrews? If they're not conclusive, then we have to they have to find their answers somewhere else. Meaning like, okay, now, if they're not the Jews, and the British Israelites are not the Jews, and, you know, we're not done yet now. We have a lot to go, but we have to really, you know, really wash this out here. Then we have to say, well, then who are the Hebrew Israelites? Okay? Now, we know from listening to Deuteronomy 28, right, that this would happen. So, when in history did Hebrew Israelites get taken out? Okay, when did their name get wiped out in history? When what event was it that this happened? And this is where we're going to study today. All right? But before we begin, I want you to know something. Okay? When the Jews say they are Jews, they're not lying. Because they are. I know that's confusing. Okay? But the problem is, see, we don't understand history. So we don't understand the history behind this word. Now, once you learn how to separate the word Jew and the people who call themselves Jews from the people who call themselves Hebrew Israelites, all right, then you'll begin to have a deeper knowledge behind the meaning of the word. Now, remember, Lucifer rules this world through sorcery. Okay? So, and what is sorcery? Like spells, mind control. Whenever you look at a commercial, you're experiencing sorcery, okay? So, anyway. So, begin. We have to understand. Now, who is this guy called Esau, and what is an Edomite? Now, according to the book of Genesis, the Hebrew Bible, Esau was the fraternal brother of Jacob, whom God renamed Israel, the patriarch and founder of the Israelites. Esau and Jacob were the sons of Isaac and Rebekah, and the grandson of Abraham and Sarah. Esau was born first, and when Jacob was born, he held on to Esau's heel, Genesis 25:26. Isaac was 60 years old when they were born, but Rebekah is believed to have been much younger. Abraham was still alive at the time, though he would have been 160 years old by this stage and would live another 15 years. All right, and that's when he married Ketar. As the firstborn, Esau was entitled to inherit the wealth of his father Isaac after death. However, he sold his birthright to Jacob in exchange for a mess of porridge, which is lentil soup. In Genesis 25:29-34, according to the Talmud, the sale of the birthright took place immediately after Abraham died. The Talmudic dating would give both Esau and Jacob an age of 15 at the time. I'm actually getting this from Wiki. Esau's name is Hebrew, which means hairy, and according to Genesis 25:25, it references to his hairiness at birth. He is also called Edom, which means red. Genesis relates this directly to his selling his birthright for some red lentil stew in Genesis 25:30, and the book also makes a point of mentioning that he was red when he emerged from the womb, Genesis 25:25. The land which was inhabited by his descendants, Edom, contained a great abundance of red rock. Okay, there's a lot of detail in there. Go back, listen to it again. And look up the scriptures if you want to verify. Now, here are a few characteristics of the Edomites taken from the World Wide Web. The land of Edom is located between the north section of Gulf of Aqaba and the southern shore of the Dead Sea, measuring approximately 100 miles, 160 kilometers long and 50 miles, 50 kilometers wide. It is named after Esau, the son of Isaac and Rebekah, who was a very slightly older fraternal twin brother of Jacob. Slightly older, what, a few seconds? Okay, the capital of Edom was Bezra. The early inhabitants of the land were Hurites, but they were driven out by the Edomites, Deuteronomy 2:12. The Edomite tribe settled also in the south of Judah, south of Judah. That's right next door, like the Kinzerites, Genesis 36:11, to whom Caleb and Othniel descendants, Joshua 15:17. Although the Edomites were closely related in blood and in language to the Israelites, they were at times in a state of war with the neighboring kings of Israel and Judah. 2 Kings 8:20-22 and Chronicles 28:17. The Edomites refused a request by Moses for the Israelites to simply pass directly through Edomite territory on their way north. That's Numbers 28:14-21. We're actually going to listen to this in a little bit. Genesis 36, which records the family tree of Esau, lists many names still associated with the land of Edom in southern Jordan. It also mentions individuals who unfavorably interactions with the people of Israel are recorded for us elsewhere as the Old Testament unfolds. This is a little short description of the conflicts between Esau, who became the Edomites. Now, this is very important because this explains why, you know, the curses actually were able to take place. Now, I'm going to play an audio file. Here is a 5-minute reading of the book of Genesis 36. Okay. Pay close attention to the dukes, which are kings. The reason why I'm playing this reading is to take your mind to a place where the deception took place. In order to do this justice, we must first understand who the Edomites are and what are their characteristics. So here's another recording called the Generation of Esau. Okay? I advise you to read the book for yourself and allow yourself to be deprogrammed. Okay, now this is going to be about 5 minutes, so sit back, listen to this. If you want, get out your Bibles, Genesis 36. Here it goes.
Chapter 36. Now these are the generations of Esau, who is Edom. Esau took his wives of the daughters of Canaan, Ada, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, and Aholibamah, the daughter of Anah, the daughter of Zibeon the Hivite, and Bashemath, Ishmael's daughter, sister of Nebajoth. And Ada bare to Esau Eliphaz, and Bashemath bare Reuel, and Aholibamah bare Jeush, and Jaalam, and Korah. These are the sons of Esau, which were born unto him in the land of Canaan. And Esau took his wives, and his sons, and his daughters, and all the persons of his house, and his cattle, and all his beasts, and all his substance, which he had got in the land of Canaan, and went into the country from the face of his brother Jacob. For their riches were more than that they might dwell together, and the land wherein they were strangers could not bear them because of their cattle. Thus dwelt Esau in Mount Seir. Esau is Edom. And these are the generations of Esau, the father of the Edomites, in Mount Seir. These are the names of Esau's sons: Eliphaz, the son of Ada, the wife of Esau; Reuel, the son of Bashemath, the wife of Esau. And the sons of Eliphaz were Teman, Omar, Zepho, and Gatam, and Kenaz. And Timnah was concubine to Eliphaz, Esau's son, and she bare to Eliphaz Amalek. These were the sons of Ada, Esau's wife. And these are the sons of Reuel: Nahath, and Zerah, Shammah, and Mizah. These were the sons of Bashemath, Esau's wife. And these were the sons of Aholibamah, the daughter of Anah, the daughter of Zibeon, Esau's wife. And she bare to Esau Jeush, and Jaalam, and Korah. These were dukes of the sons of Esau. The sons of Eliphaz, the firstborn son of Esau: Duke Teman, Duke Omar, Duke Zepho, Duke Kenaz, Duke Korah, Duke Gatam, and Duke Amalek. These are the dukes that came of Eliphaz in the land of Edom. These were the sons of Ada. And these are the sons of Reuel, Esau's son: Duke Nahath, Duke Zerah, Duke Shammah, Duke Mizah. These are the dukes that came of Reuel in the land of Edom. These are the sons of Bashemath, Esau's wife. And these are the sons of Aholibamah, Esau's wife: Duke Jeush, Duke Jaalam, Duke Korah. These were the dukes that came of Aholibamah, the daughter of Anah, Esau's wife. These are the sons of Esau, who is Edom, and these are their dukes. These are the sons of Seir the Horite, who inhabited the land: Lotan, and Shobal, and Zibeon, and Anah, and Dishon, and Ezer, and Dishan. These are the dukes of the Horites, the children of Seir, in the land of Edom. And the children of Lotan were Horai, and Hemam, and Lotan's sister was Timnah. And the children of Shobal were these: Alban, and Manahath, and Ebo, Shepho, and Onam. And these are the children of Zibeon, both Aja and Anah. This was that Anah that found the mules in the wilderness as he fed the asses of Zibeon his father. And the children of Anah were these: Dishon, and Aholibamah, the daughter of Anah. And these are the children of Dishon: Hemdan, and Eshban, and Ithran, and Kiran. The children of Ezer are these: Bilhan, and Zeavan, and Akan. The children of Dishan are these: Uz, and Aran. These are the dukes that came of the Horites, Duke Lotan, Duke Shobal, Duke Zibion, Duke Ana, Duke Dishon, Duke Ezer, Duke Dishan. These are the dukes that came of Hori among their dukes in the land of Seir. And these are the kings that reigned in the land of Edom before there reigned any king over the children of Israel.
The king.
And Bela, the son of Beor, reigned in Edom, and the name of his city was Dinhabah. And Bela died, and Jobab, the son of Zerah of Bozrah, reigned in his stead. And Jobab died, and Husham of the land of Temani reigned in his stead. And Husham died, and Hadad, the son of Bedad, who smote Midian in the field of Moab, reigned in his stead. And the name of his city was Avith. And Hadad died, and Samla of Masrekah reigned in his stead. And Samla died, and Saul of Rehoboth by the river reigned in his stead. And Saul died, and Baal-Hanan the son of Achbor reigned in his stead. And Baal-Hanan the son of Achbor died, and Hadar reigned in his stead. And the name of his city was Peu, and his wife's name was Mehetabel, the daughter of Matred, the daughter of Mazahab. And these are the names of the dukes that came of Esau, according to their families, after their places, by their names. Duke Timnah, Duke Alva, Duke Jetheth, Duke Aholibamah, Duke Elah, Duke Pinon, Duke Kenaz, Duke Teman, Duke Mibzar, Duke Magdiel, Duke Iram, these be the dukes of Edom, according to their habitations in the land of their possession. He is Esau, the father of the Edomites.
All right, now, Esau, the father of the Edomites. You hear all them dukes? You hear all them kings? Now, that is very important to pay attention to, because we're going to draw on that later on. Now, I have another file. This is just 1 minute, okay? Now, listen, I know genealogy is not the most exciting thing. I said this before. But in order for us to get an understanding, then, you know, we really need to pay close attention to this. And if the Most High is going to write this, if it's going to be in the books, then we should pay attention to it. Now, if you were listening to the first, when I first started the show, I told you about how there was libraries and books and libraries of books that have been destroyed. So the little stuff we got left, we better pay attention to it closely. All right, now, here's the second file. And it's just 1 minute, all right? So here we go.
Now these are the kings that reigned in the land of Edom before any king reigned over the children of Israel. Bela the son of Beor, and the name of his city was Dinhabah. And when Bela was dead, Jobab the son of Zerah of Bozrah reigned in his stead. And when Jobab was dead, Husham of the land of the Temanites reigned in his stead. And when Husham was dead, Hadad the son of Bedad, which smote Midian in the field of Moab, reigned in his stead. And the name of his city was Avith. And when Hadad was dead, Samla of Masrekah reigned in his stead. And when Samla was dead, Sheol of Rehoboth by the river reigned in his stead. And when Sheol was dead, Baal-Hanan the son of Achbor reigned in his stead. And when Baal-Hanan was dead, Hadad reigned in his stead, and the name of his city was Pei. And his wife's name was Mehetabel, the daughter of Matred, the daughter of Mazahab. Hadad died also. And the dukes of Edom were Duke Timnah, Duke Eliah, Duke Jetheth, Duke Aholibamah, Duke Elah, Duke Pinon, Duke Kenaz, Duke Teman, Duke Mibzar, Duke Magdiel, Duke Iram. These are the dukes of Edom.
Okay. Dukes of Edom. All right. Now, keep those dukes in your mind. And, okay, now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read to you Numbers 14:24. This is where the Edomites deny the Hebrew Israelites passage through the land during the Exodus of Egypt. Okay? Now, okay, it says, Moses sent messengers from Kadesh to the king of Edom. Thus say your brother Israel. You know all the adversary that has befallen us, all right? This is when they were coming out of Egypt, how our father went down to Egypt, and we dwelt in Egypt a long time, and the Egyptians dealt harshly with us and our fathers. And when we cried to the Lord, when he cried to the Most High, he heard our voices and sent an angel and brought us forth out of Egypt, and here we are in Kadesh, a city on the edge of your territory. Now, let us pass through your land. We will not pass through the fields, vineyards, neither will we drink water from a well. We will go along the king's highway, and we will the king's highway, all the Edomites. We will not turn aside to the right hand or the left until we have passed through their territory. But Edom said to him, you shall not pass through, lest I come out with a sword against you. And the people of Israel said to them, we will go up by the highway, and if we drink of your water and my cattle, then we'll pay you for it, right? Let me alone, please, through on foot. Let me alone pass through on foot, nothing more. But he said, you shall not pass through. And Edom came out against him with many men and with a strong force. Thus Edom refused to give Israel passage through the territory. So Israel turned away from him. All right. Now, the reason why I'm playing you these two audio files and reading the book of Genesis is to take your mind to the beginning of these two events. Now, first you listened to the history of the kings of Edom, and then you heard how they still had hatred for their brothers, the Israelites. This vital information is for your understanding for the future events, okay? And in order to understand this, you have to understand this when the migration of Hebrews began, we have to look at the fall of the temple of Jerusalem, right? Now, what I'm saying is that, okay, we understood, like, the Hebrew Israelites all had conflict with Edom, okay? Now, Moses warned them. He goes, if you guys don't follow these things, this is going to happen to you. Now, the Most High already knew that they already had people that didn't like them, and they were, like, just waiting for them to slip. And the Hebrews were, they were just hard-headed, and they weren't listening. So they were being set up, and they didn't know it. Now, this is the Babylonian exile. The exit from Babylon. This is going to, I'm going to read this from Wikipedia. And this is a very small explanation on what was going on in Babylon at this time. Now it says, according to history recorded in the Hebrew Bible, there were three deportations of Jews to Babylon. The first in 597 BCE, that means before Common Era, involving King Jehoiakim and his court and many others. A second in 587 BCE of the next king, Zedekiah, and the rest of the people. And a final deportation at the unspecified time after this, possibly 582 BCE, following the assassination of Gedaliah, the Babylonian governor. The exile ended in 538 BCE with the fall of Babylon to the Persian king Cyrus the Great, who gave the Jews permission to return to Yehuda Providence and rebuild the temple. That was exactly the 70 years, right? The captivity and the subsequent return to the land of Israel and the rebuilding of the second temple in Jerusalem and pivotal events in Jewish history and Judaism had a far-reaching impact on the development of Jewish culture and practices. All right, so, this is basically speaking about what was going on, and they gave you the events. All right? Now, I only got 11 minutes left, and I really wanted to end this with after going through Nebuchadnezzar, but I think I'm going to have to split this up into another story. I mean, another series. But that's all right. That's okay. I'm just going to yak a little bit. But okay. Listen now. This topic is pretty big, because what's going on right now in Palestine and with these people is just, it's whack. All right. I'm trying not to curse, because this is I need my boys gonna listen to this show one day, and I don't wanna be like on here yakking and cursing and all this other stuff. So I'm trying to keep it civilized. But come on now. Anybody that has a brain will know that the Most High, the creator of this universe, the creator of all things, will not act in this way. His chosen people will not do this. Okay, now we say, okay, yeah, but there was times when, you know, when the children of Israel were killing babies and they were killing women and children and stuff like that. But did you actually read the content? Do you know what was actually happening back then? You know what I'm saying? Now, the fallen angels, the children of the fallen angels, the giants, the hybrids, do you understand what was going on? See, the world that we have today is extremely different to the world that was then. Okay, the world that was then, there was like spirits, there was giants. I mean, it was insane. Okay, it was insane. That's why, you know, idol worship then was idol worship. You know what I mean? They had like, you know, even though the gods couldn't speak and couldn't move, but they were doing stuff. For the person to actually come in there, you would ask the god, okay, can I have this lady or this gold or whatever? And then the spirits would just give it, because the spirits at this time were just buck wild. Okay? And if you remember, there's like these huge stones that were found, Pantheon, I can't think of it right now, but there's these stones, they're like tons. I think they're like 10 tons or 6 tons or something, but they're huge, and they say no crane can lift them. But yet, these things are like perfect squares, right? They're like, you know, huge rectangles, and they moved them somehow from one area to the next. How can you do that? No man on earth can be that strong. But the giants can, you know? I mean, understand, there were actually giants in the world in those days. So, these events that are happening, the reason why I'm saying this is because when the children of Israel were on this cleansing of Israel, the reason why they got to land is because they cleansed it of these giants. And the purpose, the point of the chosen was that they were supposed to bring a message, okay? A monolithic message, a message of the Creator. And that message is being lived out today. If you don't think this is all in the works, it's a divine plan. Of course it's a plan. You know, we were supposed to suffer. We were supposed to go into captivity. We were supposed to go into slavery for 400 years for the events that are happening today. You know, there are brothers all over this world. Hebrew Israelites are everywhere and known about us. Think about what we can do. Best singers, best dancers, best sports. I mean, we bring flavor to life. Think about it. I was thinking about this today. I was saying, like, man, all of the artistic influences, you know, think about how much we have given to this world. You know, we have given so much. And what they are doing in Israel is not a representation of the Hebrew Israelite. That's a representation of the Jews. And who are the Jews? The Jews are extremely different from the Hebrew Israelites. And I will prove that. You know, I have a lot of things. I'm just getting started with this study. It's a lot bigger than I thought it was. And I'm going to be really getting into Egypt. Because the usurpation happened at the same time with Egypt. And if you read in, Ecclesiastes 30, I believe, you will actually read a prophecy that talks about how Egypt will be also brought into captivity. Now, if Egypt is brought into captivity, right, at the same time the Israelites are brought into captivity, then that land is cleansed, is taken out. We are both taken out, and we're both distributed. So when you have brothers in the United States talking about, I'm a Moor, and, you know, the brother said, no, I'm a Hebrew Israelite. Yeah, you're true. You're both. Because we both got brought there. You know what I'm saying? That's why we have this conflict with Islam and stuff. Yes, we all got brought there. But it's time for the Hebrew Israelite to say, yo, this is me, this is who I am. You know, you can be a Moor or whatever, but understand that we're both in this situation together. And we're both going to get out of it together. You know? Okay, I'm going to break out of here. I'm going to play one thing for y'all. And thank you so much for coming. I'm going to probably try to make a show for Wednesday and then do the last show Sunday. I might have to do this three parts. I hope not. But anyway, I'm going to play this song. This is, of course, KRS-One. And, yep, see you next time.
Hit it. Stronger than war, to conquer it and its more.